You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our topic today is... we're going to be talking about the emotions and the passion and the emotions that we have for our family and how it's important to have emotional intimacy. Now, our guest today, Lisa Smith, has a master's degree and is credentialed in counseling as well as an administrative services credential. She has completed over 1,100 intervention home visits while working with youth and families for over 18 years. Now, after teaching for several years and directing one of the largest after-school programs for at-risk kids, she became the intervention counselor at a large urban high school in Southern California. It was here that she found her passion in helping families come together, heal their relationships, and overcome their challenges together. Lisa now runs her own business called Save My Family Today as an in-home family coach in Los Angeles and Orange County. She also does public speaking and teaches parenting classes throughout Southern California with a focus on providing families with support and tools they need to communicate, understand each other, and grow in a healthy and efficient way. Lisa, welcome back to Answers for the Family.
Good morning, Alan. Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Well, it is great to have you here. And we were just talking a little bit before we went on the show. And, you know, I love the fact that you are the one that goes out to the home. And I think that's a huge thing that maybe a lot of people don't think about, you know, is by going out and working with these families in their environment. You know, I think that speaks volumes because I think there's so much more that you can see, that you can learn, and that you can help them with by doing that, rather than being in a situation to where somebody comes to your office. You know, it's nice at some point to be able to sit down and talk to them, but I think that being in their environment must make a huge difference. Tell us a little bit about why you do that and what are the biggest advantages.
You're absolutely right. One reason I go into the home is because typically families, especially teens and children, are more comfortable in their own home setting. So they're more honest, they're more willing to be vulnerable. The other advantage is that I get to see dynamics within the family that I would not get to see in an office. Typically in an office, you'll see one family member at a time. Mm-hmm. It's one-on-one counseling. What I do is typically the family as a whole, which again allows me to see the different dynamics in their relationships and address those directly.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about, again, the topic of the day, which is emotional intimacy. What are some of the things? Well, first of all, you know, what do you define emotional intimacy to be?
That's a great question. And really, the definition is a detailed knowledge of the other person. So it's opening up all the closets of your mind, your heart, your soul to another human being. It's important to keep in mind that human being is also imperfect and has issues. So it's taking a risk, letting the other person know who you really are.
Okay. Now, I, you know, I know that trust is hugely important. You know, I value it very much in my family and my intimate relationships. So I know that that must be one of the biggest issues that you run into. So talk a little bit about how important, you know, trust within the relationship is, you know, and how you need that before you can allow yourself to really be emotionally intimate with another person.
Trust is extremely important. It's absolutely necessary, but it's also tricky because you have to be willing to give it and the other person has to be willing to earn it. The giving part is the risking part because when we are in relationships with people, we want to choose people who are safe, who've shown consistency in being a person that can be trusted with your personal information. While there is risk, it's important to know that without taking that risk, you can experience emotional connectedness. And without emotional connectedness, we tend to feel isolated and alone.
Well, now, what are some of the ways that we as parents, and especially as parents of teens, can get our teens to trust us? And I say that because I think, you know, we go through a period of time with our kids, you know, when they're 5 years old, we know as far as they're concerned, we know everything. And in most cases, they feel like they can trust us by saying anything that comes to their mind. And once they become teenagers, something seems to happen. I mean, either a long needle comes out of the sky and sucks out half our brain and we just get really dumb, or other things happen that the teens now believe that they can't trust us as their parents.
That's a good point. That's true. Maybe a long needle does come out of the sky. But the way we can earn that trust back, what I see regularly is when parents are willing to be vulnerable themselves. And that might include saying, I'm sorry. It might be admitting on the parent's behalf, I don't know everything. I don't know the answer to this problem. But that's part of building emotional intimacy, when the parent can demonstrate their own vulnerability, their own emotions. If they're struggling with something, if there's a challenge within the family, they can show their child, look, I know everything's not okay. I'm feeling a little bit afraid myself, but together we're going to get through this. And that innately is what builds trust.
Absolutely. Now, can you give us some examples as to why emotional intimacy is so important, I mean, in any relationship, but especially within our own family?
It's extremely important within the family because, as most of us know, as children, we imitate our parents. So from an early age, we subconsciously learn, is it safe to share and express our emotions and our thoughts? And we do that typically within our family. So in our childhood, if the family unit is a safe place to express our vulnerability, we tend to carry that into adulthood. And so we subconsciously assume that most relationships, it's safe to be vulnerable. However, if you grow up in a family where emotions are hidden or suppressed, perhaps if you express emotions and the result is you being teased or shamed, you take that into adulthood as well. And it becomes extremely difficult as an adult to then learn how to be vulnerable with other people. So it has to start in the family. And frankly, I really think that's probably the biggest gift parents can give their children, is to create that kind of environment. And also to teach children how to express themselves when they are upset, when they're excited. You know, how is it appropriate to demonstrate those things?
Yeah, I mean, as you were saying that, I was thinking of some of the famous terms that many of us, or at least of my generation, may have heard. I mean, and as a male, you know, a father saying, stop that or shut up or I'll give you something to cry about. I mean, you know, obviously that's suppressing, you know, not only our emotion, you know, but our ability to, you know, to vent that emotion. So they're essentially saying to keep that in. How damaging do you see that being, and what are some ways in which we can turn that around?
So damaging. In fact, unfortunately, I see it quite often. And typically when you start to see the damage of that is in the teen years. If a child has grown up, you know, maybe through their preteen years, not being able to express that, parents saying, you know, stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about, whatever that might look like in any given family. Oftentimes it turns to anger and resentment. And that's because, one, there's a buildup of emotions that haven't been able to be expressed and vented. The other thing is, it's in the teen years that kids start making real connections with other people, usually their peers.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't know how to express themselves appropriately in their family, it plays out in their relationships at school, for example, and even outside of school. And you see a lot of dysfunctional friendships, I guess you could say. The other thing is it really can turn into depression, anxiety. They can't be comforted. A child can't be comforted if they're not able to tell people how they're feeling. So if they're distressed or if they're sad, but they feel like they have to keep that to themselves, it can be a very lonely feeling, which obviously would lead to, you know, outcomes that would be unfortunate.
Yeah, and while we're talking about the teen years, and this is also the time in which we are starting to become attracted to the opposite sex.
That's right.
So, I mean, share with us a little bit how, I mean, the way in which the mother and father interact with each other, how the children seeing that relationship and that interaction, how does that affect them when they're now starting these early relationships with someone of the opposite sex?
It affects them very much. And I would say the number one way that it does is, again, feeling safe, showing affection. And it doesn't even have to be physical affection, but any kind of emotional connectedness, you know, telling someone that you're interested in them, even telling someone, oh, you look nice today, or I really like you. If you don't see that modeled in your family between your parents, then you don't know how to do that in your own relationships. And people then feel very insecure. So they might go about it in a way that's not appropriate. They want to express their feelings. They don't know how to do it in the correct way. So it ends up becoming more problematic than relationship building.
Now, and how much is what they see or learn on television or the internet, what they use to replace that if they're not seeing it modeled at home?
A huge amount. And unfortunately, even if they do see it modeled at home, what they see on TV and on the internet is a huge influence. So parents, I would say, kind of have double duty in that regard. We hear all the time of celebrities, reality TV, whoever it might be, getting themselves into trouble with their significant others. And our kids today are inundated really 24/7 with this via phones and iPads, computers, television, movies, video games. So parents have to be, one, very aware of what their kids are watching and what they're mm-hmm. allowing into their homes, but also have discussions about this. If there's a topic that comes up and your kids are talking about it, they're excited about it, or they're curious about it, talk about it. Is that appropriate? Is it inappropriate? Does it meet up with our family values? Is that an appropriate way to express yourself? This is a way to build emotional intimacy. You get the kids talking about their own feelings.
Okay, well, let's role play this a little bit, because when you said to talk about it, once you ask the child to tell you more about that, or once you give your opinion, how do you stay away from the issue of the child saying, well, first of all, you don't understand because you're just old, your generation doesn't get it, or secondly, that all you're doing is judging?
Well, you may want to start by admitting, yes, I am old. I am much older than you, and that's okay. But in admitting that and saying, yes, things are different than when I grew up, but the basics in relationships are still the same. The hard part for parents is when kids say, you don't understand, this is what I want to do, this is how I feel about it. At times, it's okay to accept that as an answer. You don't have to debate in that moment. You don't have to work to change their mind in that moment, prove that they're wrong. You just kind of let them speak their piece, give them your input, and then walk away. It's great to revisit that conversation maybe a few days later, a few weeks later, as it comes up. But so often I see parents get almost sucked into these conversations. I do know what it's like to be a teenager. You know, I'm not as old as you think I am. And that really isn't fruitful. It's not going to build the relationship. In fact, what it's going to do is repel your teens further away from you.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. And I think I love the fact about what you're saying. Sometimes it's best to just, you know, walk away, readdress it. Don't feel like it goes under that category of pick your battles.
Absolutely.
You know, at that point, picking a battle in regards to if this particular rapper should or shouldn't have cheated on this other rapper, probably isn't the battle that you need right then to make that particular, to send that message. But at the same time, it sounds like what you're saying is go back and model it. You know, rather than tell them this is why it's wrong, just go back and model it in your own life and let them see how successful you're being by not doing what they're talking about.
Absolutely. It goes back to modeling healthy relationships. A really good way to bring it home for the teen is to play it out in their own life. So if there's some drama between, you know, as you said, rappers or celebrities, let's talk about your friends, you could say to your kids, you know, how would you treat them? Would you have their back, so to speak? Would you show loyalty? Would you expect loyalty from them? You'd be surprised how they do kind of change their tune when it becomes very personal. But like you said, you have to pick your battles because unless it's a safety issue and you have to deal with it right in that moment, there's really no urgency to change their mind. This is part of growing. It's part of them learning. Their perspectives are going to change. So, you know, find peace in that as parents and continue to have the ongoing conversation and model it in the home.
And you're right. I couldn't agree more. You touched a little bit on having them turn the situation around and put themselves in it. Share with us a little bit more about that, where you have a particular situation and you've just asked them where they might be in this particular role and have them take the other role, be the role of the person who got cheated on or be the role of the person who got hit by their boyfriend or girlfriend. Let's talk a little bit about that. What happens when you get them to reverse that role? How, in other words, if they go with it, that's great. How about when they don't go with it? At what point do you let that go? And then, as you say, readdress it another time.
Well, I think first of all, it's always a matter of physical safety, and that might sound obvious, but if they are feeling so upset that they might act out, then you need to put a stop to that immediately. Otherwise, again, you want to let them talk. You want to let them express their own views. And it's a great time to talk about things like showing grace to other people. How do we be gracious to people who mess up? And we all mess up. We make mistakes. We've, you know, lied, whatever it might be. We've unintentionally hurt someone else. So you put your child in that position and you say, what would you want someone else to do to you if you were the one that made that mistake? And inevitably, they're going to say, probably, well, I would never make that mistake. And you say, okay, well, on the day that you're not perfect, what would you like them to do? And you can kind of turn it around into, you know, wanting to be treated with love and grace, and you can take it away from the celebrity situation and make it more real life.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We have an email, a question or a comment that is coming across that I want to read you. This one says, I very much enjoyed reading about your show on Alan's site. My daughter, 18, and my son, 16, talk and text to each other all day. Last year, my son went through a terrible bout of depression that he had hid from the rest of us. Thankfully, my daughter's good judgment to talk to us brought in light to my son's thoughts of suicide. I believe his life may have been saved because of the way we all responded and supported my son through this difficult time. I am excited to share Lisa's work with families who need to learn how to communicate with each other.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big one. First, my heart goes out to that family because I know that that's extremely difficult to see someone that you love deeply struggle with depression and suicidal ideation. Unfortunately, it's not as uncommon as we might think. But as we said earlier, one of the best ways to negate those feelings, or maybe not even negate those feelings, but address them, is to encourage emotional connectedness with other people. Typically, someone who's feeling suicidal feels very isolated and misunderstood, which is often the reason they don't tell anyone that they're feeling that way, because they think they'll be judged. No one will really know why. I've had kids tell me they're suicidal, and they'll say something like, I know, it looks like I have everything. It looks like I have the perfect family, so you probably don't even know what I'm going through. And the fact is, I probably do understand some of what they're going through more than they might realize. But getting them to talk about it, first of all, makes the issue less threatening. When it stays in our head, it can become so big and so overwhelming and dark. But when we talk about it with someone that's safe, someone who's proven that they're trustworthy, has proven that they love us, that in itself can save someone's life. As far as this family and their response, it sounds like they did an amazing job embracing right. their son with love and support. And here's the thing I really hope parents can take away today. You're not going to understand your children, your teenagers, or your adult children all the time. But that doesn't mean you can't support them. You just almost have to accept it. You might think, why are they so depressed? They do have everything. They have so many opportunities. We love them. They live in a great home. And that's probably all true. So even though you don't understand the root of the problem, it doesn't mean you can't embrace it and tell them that you love them and you're there for them regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this particular comment, and again, I thank you for taking the time to send this comment in. For all of you that do, we appreciate it. We love getting the emails, the instant messages, in some cases the calls, and we will always do whatever we can to address them. And in this one, I think one of the issues here is the fact that she trusted or that he trusted enough, he trusted his sister. And I think that touches on another issue where, if, as a parent, if you're going to constantly give up one of your children, you know, in other words, if one of your children tells you something about the other, and if you give them up, mm-hmm. you know, well, you know, Johnny told me this, so I know that you did that, they're not going to trust bringing that to you. And in that case, you know, the boy may not trust now bringing it to the daughter. So you're actually achieving a lack of trust on two different levels, where in some cases, if a child brings you something, you don't have to acknowledge where you got it. You don't have to deal with it right at that moment, unless it's a situation like this. But obviously, they did something right from the standpoint of this boy feeling like he could go to his daughter. He could go to his sister. And then the daughter felt that this was something urgent enough to bring it to the parents.
Absolutely. The number one rule is, you know, don't reveal your sources.
Yeah.
So wherever you get the information from, unless it's a matter of life and death, it doesn't need to be shared. The fact is, you have the information, so now what are you going to do with it? The other thing is, somewhere in this family, emotional intimacy was demonstrated. And that's how the son even knew how to talk to his sister. He knew that it was okay to talk with his sister. And ultimately, it sounds like it ended up saving his life.
Mm-hmm. Well, along these same lines, let's talk about secrets. I think all families have secrets. At what point do we keep them, and at what point do we share them?
That is the question of the day, I'll admit. It can be hard to know. Let me start by saying, in no way am I advocating the airing of all dirty laundry to the whole world. That would be foolish. I do challenge you, though, to seriously consider the secrets you keep, and more importantly, the secrets you ask your kids to keep. Because when we're asked to keep some kind of harmful or painful secret, again, the individual can't be comforted because no one knows what's going on. So as far as what do you share, what don't you share, it's really up to the individual. But I would encourage you, if it directly impacts your family, if it directly impacts your kids, that you need to find safe people for them to talk to. And even if that's just a professional, maybe you don't want anyone in your world to know, that's okay. But it's not fair to put that on your kid. So find a professional that they can talk to. We don't want parents talking about adult matters with their kids. That's not appropriate. But again, when there's issues that affect the family, such as addiction or mental health issues or abuse or even financial struggles, anything like that, it's appropriate to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to in my own case, having a father that has chosen to tell my teenage sons everything that I did wrong. we were just out visiting them recently, and the kids got to kind of give me a little zing, you know, when I was commenting in regards to something that they had done or whatever, and so my dad goes, well, if you think that was bad, let me tell you what your dad did.
No.
And I'm going, oh. Fortunately, it was something that we could all sit and laugh about and things like that. But yeah, I think that's the type of thing to where, you know, some things, you know, well, let me ask you that. I mean, you know, some things like that are probably good, that make the child feel like, you know, I'm okay. You know, he's not so perfect as he thinks he is. At what point is maybe that going over the line?
Well, I see parents struggle with this quite a bit. And actually, a client who's become a dear friend of mine recently was dealing with this. She has 5 teenagers living in her home. And let me tell you, there's a lot of decision making that has to happen in the moment, because each kid might be struggling or experimenting with different behaviors. So let's just say it's drugs or alcohol or, you know, a myriad of other things. This particular mother had lived through a lot of those experiences herself as a teenager, and as a result, experienced much heartbreak. However, she was able to recover from those things. She's extremely successful now, has a healthy marriage, a great family. So we were talking about this actually just a few weeks ago, because one of her sons is struggling, and she said, do I tell him that I've struggled with the same thing? We thought on it. We noticed that this particular son was slipping into a depression. And through conversation, and because this family works very hard on emotional intimacy, the son finally opened up and said, I feel like such a loser because I'm having these struggles with addiction. At that point, it was absolutely in the family's best interest, in the mm-hmm. son's best interest, for the mom to say, hey, you're not a loser. I've been there. I've been through the same thing. I do know what it's like, and we're going to get you help, and you're going to come out the other side. So it takes a lot of discernment and discretion, but I think if it can offer hope, then the parent's almost obligated to share their experience. I would advise against it if the parent's doing it with the intention of being friends with their kids. Like, oh yeah, I used to do that too. Oh, that's so funny. It was so cool. That's probably not going to serve the purpose that you're looking for.
I think that's a great point, because at that point in the case that you just described, he was reaching out.
Correct.
I mean, at that point, he's reaching out for help, and you're bringing something in that's helpful, as opposed to, you know, trying to, as you said, to be their friend, which, you know, I don't think that's gonna work so well.
No, it never does.
All right. We're going to take a break. We will be right back. You are listening to Answers for the Family. We are speaking with Lisa Smith, and our subject is emotional intimacy within our family. We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And you're back with Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Lisa Smith. Her company is Save My Family Today. She's a in-home family coach, and we're talking about emotional intimacy within the family. Now, while we were at break, we got another email that came in, and this one reads, our PTA held workshops a few months ago that were an overwhelming success. Each parent had to make a pledge. One was reestablishing the family dinner at least three nights a week. Others involved playing board games, going out into nature, and so on. Parents reported back that pledging was key to performing. They also felt their kids were opening up more, and that the relationship was evolving into a two-way street of good communication. I was wondering if your guest feels we are on the right track and what other suggestions she might have to enhance our efforts.
I love that. Love it. I think when she said pledging is really the gateway to action, absolutely. You have to set an intention, first of all, that you're going to do something before it happens. And people hear about family dinners, for example, all the time. And I think we almost don't hear it anymore when it's brought up because it's become so common. But that's exactly the kind of setting where emotional intimacy and real bonding, emotional bonding and trust is built. So whether it's family dinners, whether it's just a weekly outing, a sporting event, whatever that might look like, as a family group, that's where it starts. It doesn't have to be these intense, you know, extremely meaningful conversations every time you're with your kids. It really happens in the day-to-day chit-chat as long as the parent is listening intently to what's being said and even what's not being said. So you pick up on things and then you follow up on that either in the moment or maybe later on. But that's when your kids get to know you. They start getting comfortable with your responses, your temperament, so that when things that really do matter come up, they know they can talk to you about it. So as far as what that PTA did, I think it's great. I'd love to know what school or what district that's in because I think it's a great idea. So keep it up.
All right. And if you're out there and you're listening and or if you listen to this show later on or you pick it up on iTunes, go ahead and either give us a call. You can call into our blog, which is answers4thefamilyblog.com. Or if you want to contact Lisa, you can go to her website, which is www.savemyfamilytoday.com. You can go to the website. You can ask questions through the website. There's a number to get a hold of Lisa if you want to discuss that further. And I agree, this PTA sounds like they really hit on something that if it's not being done in other PTAs, I think it certainly should be. Now, you focused on the fact about pledge. I believe that in the settings when you're working, you set up family contracts. So share with us a little bit about why the family contract, why putting it down in writing, and what are some of the things that you put in there that really help a family stay together?
Well, first of all, it's important to remember kids are very smart and they have great memories when they need to. So having these contracts written out, what's expected of each family member, one provides clarity so that later no one can say, you didn't say that, you said this. The other thing is setting the intention and setting the value. So we value honesty. We value responsibility. That might look like chores or getting good grades. What the parents are responsible for as well is important because I'll tell you, kids are not going to respond well if they think all of it's put on them. So mm-hmm. The contract needs to include parental responsibilities. In doing this, the kids know that they're going to be held accountable and they know ahead of time what the consequences are going to be. So there's no surprises and it really gives them the power to make choices for themselves. So, for example, you know, allowance, which is a whole topic in and of itself. You say, this is how you're going to earn your allowance. Do these three things every day. We'll check them off the list. If you don't, you're not going to get paid. Okay, that's super clear. It's written down. And then the kids can decide, not into it, don't want to do it this week. No problem. Then you're not going to get your money. It really takes the drama. It takes the arguing out of it. And again, it brings focus and really a mission and value statement to what the family wants to accomplish.
All right. Now, I'd love to get some examples. And I know that this may be difficult because of the fact that, you know, kids are of all ages, and families are of all economic, you know, structures across the board. But what are some of the things that are sort of staples, some of the things that you can put in that are, you know, specific guidelines and or consequences, be it positive consequences or negative consequences? What are some of the staples that that those that are listening out there could think about and go, oh, that would be something that would really help my family?
That's a great question, because again, no matter what age your kids are, no matter what your socioeconomic background is, there are certain things that I think every family should implement and hold fast to. First, let me say contracts should be short and sweet. You don't have 25 things on there because it's not going to work. So you really want to think as parents, what are the most important things to you that your kids perform in the household? So I would suggest that number one is respect. And it's kind of an umbrella. There's a lot of times when families say, oh, our kids are fighting all the time amongst each other. They fight with us. They're disrespectful to each other. So if the number one thing on the list is respect, that means no talking back, no calling names, taking care of the things that we give you. Responsibility should be another one, and that can include chores, it can include grades. As far as specifics, that does vary, you know, each kid, what they're capable of. And to some parents, it's not important that their kids get straight A's. To others, it is. And that's fine. That's an individual decision you have to make. Something that I think every family should have, either in a contract or posted on the refrigerator, every member of the family every day needs to ask, is there anything else I can do for you? Because it's not about earning allowance or privileges. It's teaching them that they're part of a unit. So they need to pull their weight. They need to be considerate of the other people there. They need to help out even when they don't feel like it. And in doing that, they really do form a habit of considering what other people's need.
Well, yes, I think you bring up a great point. And then within the contract, when you were talking about, you know, you're putting things in that are responsibility, putting things in that you know, that deal with respect. I think that, and I'll tell a quick story in regards to our own family contract, and that is that I ask, you know, I ask the other family members, what is it that's important to them? What is it that they would want? And maybe 2 years ago, one of the things that was put in had to do with grades. You know, that, you know, certain grades will relate to like a certain amount of money going towards a car because he was getting close to an area of getting a car. So if you get this grade, this much is going to go towards it. But if you get this grade that's better, even more is going to go towards it. And my son said, after we went over that, he said, I'd like to add something. I said, okay. He said, if I get straight A's, you'll lease me a particular car.
I love it.
And I said, you know, we'll go for that. Well, I want to share with everybody, he's driving that car.
Good for him.
So what we learned was, because it was something that he brought up, I believe that it was a great motivator. That and what he wanted became a great motivator, a much greater motivator than what I was putting in. Mm-hmm. What I was putting in apparently wasn't motivating enough when he saw it his way. And so I guess the point to that, to the parents, is let them put things in. It doesn't mean you have to add everything. And I didn't. There were other things that were brought up that were like, no, that's not going to happen.
Sure.
But if the more involved they are in it, would you agree, the more involved they are in it, the greater chance you have that they're going to follow it?
Absolutely, because they feel more invested. So something that I do after parents give their suggestions for the family contract, I often ask the kids, what do you need from your parents? And at first, it's stunned silence that someone's even asking that. And they'll say, you know, every family's different, but they'll say things like, I just want them to stop nagging, or I want them to stop yelling, or I don't like it when I'm teased, whatever that might look like. So you put those in the contract and you hold the parents accountable. It actually makes the kids feel, I think, more trust in their relationship, because now someone's looking out for them as well. Like I was saying earlier, it's not, the responsibility isn't all on them. It's on the whole family as a unit.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And I have an example of that as well, not so much in my own, but a family that that established a family contract, a professional like yourself established a family contract, and the family asked, and the professional, that I became the arbitrator of that contract, which I think is another good point that we should touch on after this, is who should be the arbitrator. And as the arbitrator, and I lived closer than I guess the professional or the other people that they considered. And in that particular one, the teenage boy had a drug problem, so there were things in there that dealt with what would happen if he backslid in that area. But the father had an alcohol problem, and he had a bit of a violence problem, and it was put in the contract. The children requested that was put in, and it was put in. I got a call, this is some years ago, but from one of the children saying that Dad is drunk and he's yelling and it sounds like he might be hitting Mom. By the time I got there, Dad was gone. Mom confirmed what had occurred. And I went back after they told me that he was there and sat down with him and had a copy of the contract and said, which was the next day, and said, you know, I've made arrangements. I said, I'm here to take you to the Betty Ford Clinic. Mm-hmm. He got so angry, I thought he was going to hit me. And I said, you know, well, you know, we're sitting here with the whole family. If you're going to sit here in front of your whole family and tell me that you're not going to honor it, what do you think is going to happen when your son thinks about the possibility of doing drugs again?
Absolutely.
And the dad got up and left with me. And I've told that story to some of the kids who have balked at a contract that the parents have tried to set up, or a professional like yourself has tried to set up for them. And it seems when they hear that story, it empowers them a little bit in going, well, wait a minute, let me think of some of the things that I could put in here. And as you said, now they buy into that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something that jumped out at me when you were telling that story is when kids are able to see their parents' brokenness, and in this case, it was alcoholism. When they see the parent willing to humble themselves and say, yes, I blew it, I need help, I don't want this for you, I want better for you, there's even more investment on the kid's part. And oftentimes, even if the children have been the ones that have been the most hurt, when there is that humility on the part of the parent and the parent seeks help, the kids are often the biggest cheerleaders. They want their parents to get better. So I think the way that was handled, the way the father responded, is great. And I'm certain that the kids were then more motivated to carry their part.
Mm-hmm. Now, and when I talked about that, there was the situation of the arbitrator. Who do you recommend that is the arbitrator, or is that something that you allow the family to decide?
It varies greatly, and I think it depends on the complexities and the intensity in the family and the dynamics going on. Typically, when I'm called in, things have gotten pretty intense, and they're not able to, you know, monitor themselves. So I kind of play good cop, bad cop, unfortunately at times, and fortunately at other times. So I usually work with clients once a week. and we'll visit the contract at that time once a week, and everyone will chime in. This is how, you know, dad did, this is how mom did, this is how the kids did. And I will be the mediator of that conversation. But the goal is to give them the tools and the communication to be able to get to that point on their own where they don't need me. But oftentimes at first they do need kind of an objective person.
So it sounds like what you're saying is you start out as an arbitrator or mediator, but you sort of wean yourself off as they gain the skills to be able to do it themselves.
Yes, absolutely. That's my ultimate goal. I mean, the goal is to come in, establish peace in the home, give them the tools they need, help them figure out how to navigate the situations at hand, because it's always different. And then hopefully they can take it from there sooner than later.
Well, while we're on that subject, and as everybody knows that listens, I love the success stories. Share with us a success story where, you know, the family brought you in, you know, there was a variety of things that they were dealing with, and just, you know, in a couple of minutes, share how they came to reach that level of emotional intimacy that sort of helped them become a family again.
Several years ago, I had a grandmother call me, and she was frantic. She'd been raising her three teenage grandsons for a while. One of them in particular was especially troubled by his upbringing. He couldn't live with his parents anymore, which is why he was living with his grandparents. There had been a lot of substance abuse and physical abuse. So in working with the family, it was very challenging at first. And we had to call the police several times during sessions because this particular teenage boy couldn't control himself. He would have emotional outbursts. A lot of times he refused to show up to sessions at all. There were times he thought I was the devil incarnate, I'm sure. But I saw how much the grandparents really did have hope for this grandson. And that's what kept me coming back. Years later, I had stopped working with the family. I'd take them as far as I could take them. We'd seen progress. The grandson was functioning at an acceptable level. And I got an email, this is probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, after some years had gone by, from the grandmother. And I'll be honest, it brought me to tears, which is not easy to do, but I was brought to tears. There was a picture of him as a young man now, he's in his early 20s. And not only does he have a job, but he's in a very healthy, successful relationship with a young woman that he thinks he's going to marry. He moved out on his own. He helps support his grandparents now instead of them having to support him. He's playing music at his church. And what dawned on me was through all of those talks and exercises that we did, and even sometimes the arguments that would come up, and even through his resistance, what he wanted to know was that he was not alone. We weren't going to back away. We weren't going to accept his behavior, but we also weren't going to turn our back on him, no matter how bad it got. So in those sessions, talk about emotional intimacy. We had some very deep conversations about very painful topics for him, things that he's experienced. But enabled to sharing those things, I think what happened was a lot of the shame for him dissipated, which in turn made a lot of the anger dissipate. He learned to trust people again. And as time went on, this started playing out in relationships outside of his family. So that may be the biggest success story I've had to date.
Wow, that's a beautiful story. And again, as we brought out in the very beginning, you know, you've had 1,100 of those. So I'm sure that there are a lot of other beautiful stories of going out and working with those families. Lisa, thank you so much for coming in. I think that you so epitomize what we want to do in this with this radio show. I mean, that was my goal, was it's Answers for the Family. None of us are perfect, but it is nice to have someone like you that we can turn to get answers when we need them. So thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
All right. And again, for anybody out there, if you want to reach Lisa, go to her website, www.savemyfamilytoday.com. Now, please stay with me for just a little bit longer. I've I have an audio recording that I'm going to play for you, but I want to tell you a little bit first. I have two very dear friends that have dealt with cancer. They are a mother and daughter, and I'm talking about two of the most beautiful inside and out people you will ever meet, and people that will do so much for everybody else. And now the time has come in which we need to do something to help them. Now, fortunately, Darnell, the daughter, Darnell is right now cancer-free. Her mother, Donya, is not. Donya needs a new liver, and we've talked with hospitals, and they want to know that they can afford even just the copay. So we've set up a site for people to be able to go to hear the story, and to please donate, do whatever it is you can to help Donya. I have a little recording from her daughter, Darnell. Thank you. And after this, the show will end, and please join us again next week. Thank you.
My name is Darnell Young, and I'm desperately reaching out for help. In 1970, after a blood transfusion, my mom contracted hepatitis C, which later evolved into terminal liver cancer. A transplant is her only chance of survival, and we don't have the means to fund the surgery. My stepdad's working as much as he can, and I just got off chemotherapy myself, so I've been limited in what I can do. Any amount you could give would help our family more than you can possibly know. You can go to our fundraising website at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com, and search One Family's Battle, onefamily_sbattle, and you can donate directly there. Don't forget to capitalize the first letter of all those words. Thank you.